just like Jacob said, it was worth enduring the Cruciatus curse for Queenie. You know, Jesus endured death on a cross for us, and apparently it was worth it, or he wouldn't have done it.
Welcome to Apologetics Simplified, a podcast about Christianity, theology, and culture. Hit subscribe to be notified of each new episode. And now, here's your hosts, Leah Chapman and Andrew Foster.
Welcome back to Apologetics Simplified, where you get to listen to us talk about things.
Woohoo!
Yay, things! We are going to be talking about one of our favorite subjects today, and that is the Harry Potter franchise and the Bible.
One of our favorite things, which is this and this. Got it.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Right. Some might call that two. Don't you have a math degree?
Look, is one collective thing, like your pants have two legs, but they're one pants.
But the Bible and Harry Potter are not the same thing.
They're not the same pants? Oh my gosh. I feel like it's worth noting up front that if you are bothered by magical things and Harry Potter, we've covered this before. We respect that. If you feel like that's not something you can engage in, we respect that. But as for us, we feel like it is fiction. It's a story, and it's a story we really enjoy. And this particular movie that just came out, we think has really, really good themes that relate to the gospel message. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Andrew posed a question that I'm now going to repose. Repose?
Repose is a word, but I'm not sure.
I'm not sure that's what it means, but you know what I'm saying. He posed it to me. I'm posing it to all of us of who is more dangerous, Grindelwald or Voldemort?
Dun,
what do you think?
Dun, dun. Well, they have very different styles. Like Grindelwald's style
has a nose.
Yes, there is that. And his face changes a few times. But Voldemort also had a pretty significant face change. So, you know,
there's that. Yeah.
But so Grindelwald's style was more to, like, I think, corrupt the hearts and get the political power and get people to turn to him. Voldemort's style was to just kill all the opposition. So I think Voldemort is the more violent, but Grindelwald might be the more dangerous. I also think he might be the more powerful. They both at one point had possession of the Elder Wand, which is like the most powerful wand ever made. Oops. Don't know why I did the accent. But but we do know that Grindelwald was, like, properly in control of it. It was loyal to him. But Voldemort, it was never loyal to. There's a whole lot of wand lore in the books that we won't get into.
Yeah, I saw something on Facebook where it was comparing, I think, Darth Vader and Voldemort and who's more dangerous. And they're like, Voldemort spent how many years trying to take over a high school and kill one teenager? Like, he's not very good at this. Yeah, I would agree. I definitely think it's Grindelwald. I think that ability to wield power and influence makes him more dangerous.
I think at Grindelwald, I mean, they're both, like, horrible villains. I think Grindelwald kind of has a more even head, a calmer temper. Like, you know, he hits a snag. He's like, okay, we'll make a new plan. Voldemort, there's a snag.
Yeah, he freaks out. Yeah, Grindelwald's very secure in his ability to control and keep power. And Voldemort was just always kind of freaked out, especially after he tried to kill a baby and it didn't work.
Yeah, he almost killed himself.
Yeah,
instead. Would have it if it wasn't for those handy-dandy horcruxes.
Yeah.
Now let's get our handy-dandy Horcrux.
Completely unrelated, but Ellie and I watched Blue's Clues the other day. I think she liked it. I sure did. Anyway.
was it a classic Blue's Clues? Yeah, Blue's Clues?
It was Steve's very first episode. It was great. Anyway, back to handy dandy Horcruxes. I definitely think Grindelwald's the more dangerous. So we're going to move on, and we're going to be talking about the theme of redemption through all of the Dumbledores. Oh yeah, and spoilers galore. Through all of the Dumbledores, and especially through Queenie and Jacob and their relationship. So we are going to be talking about that in just a moment. But before that, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast, leave a rating and review, tell everyone how much you love it. Tell us how much you love it. I like to read your reviews. It's good for our fragile egos. No, just kidding. No, it is good because then people see your reviews and they're like, oh, this must be a good podcast. Look at all the ratings and reviews, and more people will listen. So we appreciate you doing that. And that's a completely free way to support podcasts.
Yay.
So without further ado, our resident person who can remember details, Andrew, is going to give us a brief summary of the movie.
Okay. Brief summary of the movie. This character's stuff happens with magic.
Wow.
Slightly less brief summary of the movie. The movie opens on a dark evening as Newt Scamander with his case and various creatures finds another mysterious creature that is giving birth. Unfortunately, this creature is killed and the child is taken, but he discovers there is another child. Turns out this creature is known as a Chillin, which is a creature that can determine purity and goodness in a wizard. Now I'm going to drop this voice and do a faster retelling of the rest of the story.
That'd probably be good.
So then after this, we learn that Newt was on a mission from Dumbledore to find this creature, and he is also assembling a kind of ragtag group of wizards and a notable muggle by the name of Jacob. Talking about Jacob, he is an American muggle. He is a baker who Newt met in the first movie. As is their standard, after the encounter, he was obliviated, which means they wiped his memory. However, it in this instance was not permanent so that the plot could move forward.
No, it's because of his love.
Oh, boy. He fell in love with a witch who can read minds and determine sincerity and stuff like that called Queenie. Queenie, unfortunately, was corrupted and joined the dark wizard Grindelwald.
Dun, dun, dun.
Also joining Grindelwald was a young, also American wizard, who named Credence, who had a very troubled upbringing and also was corrupted and was told that Grindelwald was the way to go and that he was Dumbledore's brother and that he needed to kill Dumbledore. That's kind of an important detail.
Yeah.
So Dumbledore gets together this ragtag group and gives them a plan that makes absolutely no sense. This is because Grindelwald can see certain events in the future. So his plan is to confuse him by making the events that he sees make no sense, which is kind of brilliant.
It is brilliant, yeah.
So eventually, Grindelwald is able to poison some minds, get some political support, a completely unwarranted pardon for his crimes, and is up for election of, it's like, I don't remember the title, but it's like, it's essentially the Secretary General of the Wizarding United Nations.
There you go.
And using the captured Chillin, which they'd actually killed and then reanimated so it would do what they wanted to do, is like, this guy should lead. And then everybody voted for him. And then they were like, no, this is a sham. We have the real one. But then also in this process, we see Queenie, who had sort of fallen to the dark side. Throughout the movie, we see the sense of regret and a longing to be back with Jacob. And we see Jacob longing to be back with her, including doing some rather reckless things out of his love to try and bring her back, which he eventually does, much to his own pain, as he does endure the Cruciatus curse at the hands of Grindelwald as a result of this. Along the way, we also learn that Credence, in fact, is a Dumbledore, as Grindelwald told him. However, he is not Albus's brother. He is Albus's brother's son. So Albus's brother Aberforth, who we first met in the books, who was not a big fan of his brother, we learn, once fell in love with someone. There was rumors of a child, but the child was gone, and he eventually learns it was him and is dealing with the regret and should he reconnect and all that stuff. We also know that Albus Dumbledore is haunted by his past with Grindelwald, their plans for essentially world domination together, that Albus was eventually like, no, this is a bad idea. We shouldn't do this anymore. Hence causing a divide as they are on completely different sides. Funny how that happens.
Yeah.
So, end of the movie, Grindelwald's sham is revealed, and Dumbledore and Grindelwald kind of had this thing where they couldn't fight each other, but because they were so far on opposite sides, that was magic was undone. I don't entirely understand what happened there.
I have a theory.
Okay.
So, they had this thing where they couldn't fight each other, but I think because he defended, who was it? Was it Jacob? No.
I think in this case, it was the person who was actually elected the president of the wizard.
Anyway, so he defended somebody else rather than attacking Grindelwald. And that's what I think broke it, in my opinion.
Yeah, because Grindelwald sent out a killing curse. Then Dumbledore blocked it. So I think
it wasn't an attack. It was a defense, but it was still sort of against each other. And I think that's what sort of ended it. That's my theory.
And this all makes way for the big Dumbledore-Grindelwald duel that we have heard about slash read about since the very first book when it was on Dumbledore's chocolate frog card.
Oh.
Yeah. He was most famous for bringing it for his duel and bringing in the dark wizard Grindelwald.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Look at that.
That went way back. And we're finally going to see that in the next movie whenever they make it. I don't know if they filmed it already. But
yeah. So did you like the movie?
I did. Yes. It wasn't like amazing.
Yeah.
And I mean, these movies, they got nothing on the Harry Potter movies, but they're entertaining. And it's nice to see kind of a different side of the wizarding world. Because everything we'd seen before was like, you know, through the eyes of kids. And of course, it developed as it went. We saw more advanced magic later on with the war and more adult wizards. But this was neat.
Yeah, I agree. I have a thing where it's like, I feel like everyone wants to compare all movies to just the top notch, absolute best, the Harry Potters, the Avengers, the whatever. But like a movie can be good in and of itself without being just like the best ever. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I feel about this a lot like I feel about Black Widow. I thoroughly enjoyed both of them. I don't really care that they weren't the best ever. I enjoyed the mystery vibe. It felt like a mystery, a movie. And that, especially being on a train, sort of had Murder on the Orient Express sort of feelings.
Yeah. I also like with these movies, kind of the big scope. Because Harry Potter was very limited mostly to Hogwarts, but then UK as a whole, this is like the world.
Yeah.
Like in these movies, they've been in America, they've been in England, France, Germany, wherever they were at the end of this one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. So over some weird mystical bridge. So thinking through these main characters, meaning all three Dumbledores and then Queenie.
Dumbledore.
Exactly. I was struck by sort of moving into the theme of redemption, like how they were redeemed. Like Albus had this past with Grindelwald, but he was not defined by that anymore, especially when that whatever bond they had broke. He had been on board in the past, but decided to not follow that path anymore, even if it was really challenging, because he and did endure some pain by trying to undermine Grindelwald when that magic thing was still active. I don't remember what it's called. So he did those bad things in the past, but he was recognized by the Chilin as being good and pure. This is one point, though, where I wish the Chilin had bowed to Jacob. I really do. It could have gone the same way. Albus could have intervened and said, maybe don't pick a muggle. I should have gone to Jacob. Anyway, so the Chilin recognized that he was now good and pure. He was not defined by his past. Aberforth learned that he was not alone. He's kind of this loner, like, when it's
a loner. And a loner's got to be alone.
Exactly.
I think that was from a Geico commercial spoofing Western movies.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. So that's all my simple thing with him is that he's not alone. And he found family in his son. You'd think he'd find family in Albus, but like Andrew said, he didn't really like Albus so much.
But I think there was also a difference because, I mean, yeah, he didn't like Albus. And it seems, you know, Albus doesn't really blame him for not liking him.
Yeah.
But even so, like at the end, like there were all these people, their mission was to stop Grindelwald. But then Dumbledore had a side mission with his brother, which was to save Credence. And kind of a detail, Credence, it's kind of like a possession sort of thing that he has. It was explained more in the first movie. But we do know that he is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they really want to like make it right with whatever time they have. So we do actually see them stand together to do this, and kind of I think there's like a nod between them at the end.
Yeah.
So there is they don't like hate each other or anything.
No. But, yeah. They can work together. They have teamwork. Mm-hmm. They're family.
And yeah, I think like friends. deep down, there is that respect. It's just buried by so much baggage.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we get Credence himself, who, if you've seen the other movies, you know all the harm he's done. And so he's not bound by that anymore. He's not bound to do that anymore. And he's not bound to those who were seeking to harm and use him, which until this point in his life was everybody, from the evil orphanage lady to then Grindelwald. Like, everyone was using him.
Yeah, and he was also one of those who was instrumental in exposing Grindelwald's lies.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Because didn't he like towards the end start speaking out at that council or whatever? Yeah. And so he was not bound to, you could say, the sin he did or the sin that was done against him, that kind of thing. And he got to have a new life for however long that was with his father who loved him. And then who I really want to lean into is Queenie. So like Andrew said, she was she can like read minds or whatever. And then she became lured by Grindelwald because, again, he was very influential, broke Jacob's heart. But then she learned she was not defined by those mistakes. And even though she felt like she was done for, it was over for her. There was no going back. Jacob just kept fighting and fighting and fighting for her and just kept pushing and saying that like he loves her. And it's so interesting the way they did her, like her hair and makeup. Because normally she's very bright, very like perky and peppy and all that. But when she
was very black, like bleached and pale.
Yes, very pale. She has a lot of like wrinkles in her face. Like she just looked exhausted and worn down.
And yeah, and Jacob just didn't give up. So part of their plan to confuse Grindelwald, they gave Jacob a fake wand.
Yes.
And there was like this fancy estate dinner that they were at. And Grindelwald was there, you know, in his candidacy. And then Jacob like goes up to him, pulls out said fake wand and threatens him with a wand that don't do nothing.
Basically an unloaded gun. Like,
yes. Which he knew was unloaded. Grindelwald knew he was not a wizard.
Yeah. Oh,
and then later on, you know, he was subjected to the Cruciatus curse. And at the end, Dumbledore apologized for him. He said, never wanted him to endure that. He was like, well, I got Queenie back, so it was all worth it.
Yeah. And this is such a good transition into moving to talk about the Bible. What came to mind for us was, let's say, the reckless love of God.
Triggered.
Triggered. How dare you? Like, he just kept loving Queenie, even though she went to basically go work for a racist. I mean, that's one way to define it. But he just loved her so much. He just kept pushing for her. He kept fighting for her. And it just reminds me of the love that God has for us, that he just keeps pushing. He, just like Jacob said, it was worth enduring the Cruciatus curse for Queenie. You know, Jesus endured death on a cross for us. God came to be in flesh, grew up from being a tiny baby to dying a terrible death for us. And apparently it was worth it, or he wouldn't have done it. This was worth it to God to make the sacrifice. And I think that's so reflected in Jacob's love for Queenie. He never gave up on her, even when she had given up on himself. Particularly from scripture, it reminds me of Peter, who, you know, Jesus was like, you're the rock on which I'm going to build this church. But then when push came to shove and Jesus was on the cross and they were like, hey, didn't you hang out with that guy? He was like, nope, nope. Nope, nope, nope. It was too many nopes. There were three nopes. he said nope three times.
like the Martians from Sesame Street. Nope, 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 nope. Yep, 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 yep,
yep. Yep, it was all nopes. Oh my gosh. You can read about Peter's denial in John 18. But then Jesus didn't give up on him after his resurrection. In John 21, you can read about Jesus coming back to them, and just like he denied, he noped Jesus three times. He then yupped Jesus and saying, yes, I will serve you. And we see that change happen. And kind of going back to the Dumbledore, what it reminded me of was Paul and James. So Paul and James originally were not followers of Jesus, but through dramatic divine circumstances, to put it briefly, they were changed and became followers of Jesus. There's always something that motivates us to choose to change. And we would say as Christians, that's God's grace. God's grace prompts us to want to put our trust in Jesus. And then really Jesus is the one who redeems us when we trust in what he did, his sacrifice, his resurrection, then we're saved. And we're redeemed from sin, from death, and we're given a new life, a new way to live. Our sin nature, we're not bound to that anymore. We still struggle with sin, but we're not bound to that. We're given a new nature. We're given new goals in life. Like we're new. And that's a continual process called sanctification, where God continues to renew us, continues to break us away from our past mistakes, from our sin nature, from our old wants and desires to something new. And that pursuit is reckless, is continual. And again, I just love the Jacob and Queenie thing, because I think it's such a good reflection on the reckless, crazy love of God for us, even when we think we don't deserve it. God is still there and he's still pursuing us because he loves us that much.
So in conclusion, though not a perfect movie, though we can't personally condone everything that is said in here, we do recommend it. It is enjoyable and you can learn from it.
What's wrong with you?
So thank you so much for listening and God bless.
Apologetic Simplified is a part of Leah Chapman Ministry Productions. To learn more, go to www.leahchapman.org. And thanks for listening.